Today's Instant Wisdom offers a wonderful example of doing more than just talk, of taking action. And it comes courtesy of a young 22-year-old German tennis player, Alexander Zverev. That's hard for me to pronounce. Zverev. Who has just made it to the semifinals of a major for the first time, the Australian Open. As John McEnroe explains, before the tournament started, Alexander promised to donate $10,000 for each match he won, all the prize money if he won the actual tournament. His explanation is a terrific example of why we should help.
Now, before the tournament, you made a magnificent gesture. You told everyone here that you would give $10,000 to the Bushfire Relief Fund for every match you won. So we're now at $50,000. You also said that if you won this tournament and won your first Grand Slam, that you would donate your entire check to the Bushfire Relief Fund. We want to know if that's still true. Because you're only two matches away now.
Easy to say in the first round, right? But why? Why did this side of the stage start laughing all of a sudden? I don't quite understand it. Yes, it is still true. I hope I can make it happen. I made the people of Australia a promise. I will keep that promise if it happens. I always said I'm not a money-driven person. My parents always taught me with money you should achieve things that help others and help the people that actually need the money. And for me right now, $4 million Australian dollars would be nice. I mean, would be very, very nice. I could maybe buy myself a few cars or something, but there's people that actually need it for their homes, for their for rebuilding wildlife, rebuilding houses, rebuilding the life that they once knew. So it's much more important that they get that money.
Good for you, Sasha.
Actually, he's an absolutely delightful young man. Unfortunately, he lost in the semifinal, but he will make his donation of $50,000. But I loved his rationale. There's other people who need it more. Well, that's the case. We have a lot of people are generous about that, but I just loved it coming from a 22-year-old. By the way, his mother tongue is German. His English is not only impeccable, it's just fabulous the way he can express himself. Alexander Zverev, someone to follow on the tour. And as I say, a great example of someone who thinks it's not just about virtue signaling. It's not just about the talk. It's about taking action. Big thumbs up to that. Coming up, Don Vialo will tell us the best time of year to buy gold, stocks, and other commodities. The patterns are absolutely fascinating, but first, time now for the quote of the week. We're coming back to who, for my money, is the most insightful political commentator in America, Peggy Noonan. She writes for the Wall Street Journal. This week, I'm featuring the quote about one of the more harebrained ideas, lowering the voting age to 16. You've heard about it in Canada, pushed by the Green Party. In the States, pushed by the Democrats. In quotes, Speaker Nancy Pelosi made herself look ridiculous this year when she backed lowering the voting age to 16. This is an idiotic and destructive idea, an epic and hackish pander, and is offensive to the baseline reality that the adults of a great nation have the right to govern its affairs. It will go nowhere, but the coming decade may see some pushback actually against 18-year-old vote, passed in 1971. A lot has changed since then. We know the brains of an 18-year-old are not fully developed and haven't fully knitted. Young people are educated more poorly, and the screens that surround them and through which they learn encourage sensation, not thought. Their experience of the world is limited. Most are financially and emotionally supported by others. All this as the questions we face grow more complex. Amen. By the way, I love that observation, that increasingly people are drawn to sensation and not thought. As I say, this is an idea, actually the 16-year-old vote is an idea that gets put forward actually with some regularity, and there's so many problems with it. Not the least of which she points out, and we know it from the marijuana debate, the brains of 16-year-olds are not fully developed. But it's a lack of experience. Most are indeed financially, emotionally supported by others, and the questions we face are indeed growing more complex. But it's the pandering. Incredible. Time now for this week's shocking stat, courtesy of Capital Direct Investment Trust. Well, of course, there's a ton of coverage on the coronavirus. But I think it's difficult to get a perspective. I think most people would be surprised to the degree that the flu, depending on different strains this year, it seems like influenza A is so dominant. But consider that the Center for Disease Control estimates, are you ready? 9 million to 26 million Americans are going to be infected with the different forms of the flu, not the coronavirus, different forms of the flu. 180,000 to 310,000 will be hospitalized this flu season. And here's a number, 10,000 to 25 numbers will die, according to the Center for Disease Control, all because of the flu. That's part of the context, at least for evaluating the severity of the coronavirus, which that story has not been finished. In Canada, by the way, the government says that there have been between, well, something like 24,000 plus laboratory detections of influenza have been reported. And like I say, the majority has been influenza A. I'm not saying this is any indication of how serious the coronavirus is, just to give you a juxtaposition, though. And time will sell. Will tell us, by the way. You know, it's interesting. We hear the numbers, like 12,000 infected and 259 have died, obviously tragically. But I think it's also important to grasp the size of China. And I think a lot of Canadians have trouble with that. Consider that there's 1.4 billion people in China. That means they basically have the same landmass of Canada with 40 times more people. But here's a stat for you. Toronto is Canada's largest city. Let's put their population at 3 million. China has 39 cities with bigger populations than Toronto, our biggest. If you just take Beijing and Shanghai, you're talking about 48 million people. So that's the context of the numbers you're hearing coming out of China. It doesn't diminish at all the severity of this crisis, especially obviously for the families that have been directly impacted. I mean, one of the things that has put me on edge is the degree to which, or the actions which China has taken, sort of, I think, reflect the potential severity of the problem. I mean, locking down major cities, and they mean locking down the saying that no tourism coming out, like tour groups aren't leaving. You've seen the reaction from various airlines coming through. You saw the reaction, you know, of Australia saying about immigration, and you're seeing that spread. So that alone has me worried. I'm just putting some of the perspective on that about the numbers. Time now for this week's Goofy Award. I'll give you first a few reminders of how your tax dollars have been spent. Legal bill for the outrageous prosecution of Vice Admiral Mark Norman, paid by us, the taxpayers, came in $1.4 million spent on a team of lawyers for the Department of Justice as the full weight of the government went after a man who had served Canada with honor. As Norman's defense lawyer, Marie Heinen, I'm terrible at names, forgive me, after the charges, he said this: no person should walk into a courtroom fighting their elected government or any sort of political factors. Well, he sort of did. Next up, back in October, the debate commission tried to block reporters from True North and the Rebel media from covering, just covering, the English language leaders debate. Didn't give them accreditation. In fact, they didn't give them the accreditation literally on the last business day before those English language debate, or that was going to take place, obviously limiting their ability to fight that injunction. They did. It would cost some legal fees, but they did get the injunction. It was incredible. But the judges did go through, and they did give the report. Thanks to the work of Blacklock's reporter, we now know the government spent $130,000 of your tax money hiring a Bay Street legal firm to advance the proposition. Think about this. I don't care who you support. Should the government decide who can and cannot cover a leader's debate? Well, the government lost badly. And now we're on the hook also for some of the legal costs of True North and Rebel Media. I mean, it was a scathing kick-ass judgment, by the way. It said that, you know, there was lack of rationality in the government's position, lack of logic. It was troubling and unfair, but it cost us $130,000 plus. Finally, now to this week's Goofy. And this one goes to the government-appointed Election Commission. Not because they wasted $430,000, we found out this week, of taxpayers' money on their social media influencers campaign in the run-up to the election. No, that was a waste. I'm talking about the investigation of the Rebels' Ezra Levant. Why? For writing a book and having a marketing plan that basically just said, buy the book. His book was called Lebranos, What the Media Won't Tell You About Justin Trudeau's Corruption. By the way, at the same time, there were three other more complimentary books about the Prime Minister published at the same time. None of them got investigated. Getting investigated for writing a book and marketing it with that slick slogan, buy the book. If you want, by the way, to get a first-hand look, Mr. Levant was flew to Ottawa, had to face the interrogation of two 30-year veterans from the RCMP who now work for Elections Canada. They did not tell him what the complaint was about, refused to say who filed the complaint, but he was threatened with increased sanctions if he didn't submit to be interviewed. I mean, it was outrageous, and this is government in action. They're not going to win anything here, but they're going to intimidate and hassle someone not liked by the government. It's as simple as that. And I couldn't care less if you like Mr. Levant or Rebel Media or anybody else, whatever side of the political spectrum. The government should not be in the business of hassling and intimidating people, and we're seeing more of it. I mean, look at this week. Handpicked government-appointed panel recommends that every television, radio, everything on the internet be government-approved. Are you kidding me? That should scare every one of us. Because the government has shown without a doubt they're prepared to hassle, make life difficult, or outright ban any content they don't like. By the way, that's far more than a goofy, as Peter Menzies, who's a former vice chair of telecommunications for the CRTC, said this is an unjustified and unprecedented power grab. But I'm afraid most Canadians will just go back to sleep. But to take an author of a book and subject him, not all authors, this one is critical of the government, and take Mr. Levant and question him for writing and marketing a book, you better think about that one. Thanks for joining us today on the Money Talks podcast. If you just discovered the show, please go back and listen to all our past episodes. Now, if you like what you hear, please leave us a rating. Tell us what you think and tell a friend about the podcast. The Money Talks podcast is available for free on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Michael Campbell, and I'll see you on the next episode of Money Talks.